I think starting all the way like from the summer break, even before the summer break, there was so much talk about like, can we drop Dzeko? And they just kept him. I just don't understand what was the logic. Like, it's not like they didn't have the opportunity to pull the plug. They could have, you know, but it's just like, yeah, I don't understand why Red Bull, like, you know, kept on believing and like kept on giving him chances after chance after chance. So yeah, I think that's probably like the biggest disappointment.
Welcome to Race Pod.
Welcome back to another episode. My name is Nathan.
And I'm Jonathan.
Together, we are the co-hosts of Race Pod, where we talk about all things Formula One.
Race Pod is the extension of Race Recap, a LinkedIn newsletter created by two F1 fans where we discuss the world of Formula One. Race Pod serves as an extension to that content pillar where we will speak about various off-track events from the F1 grid while also looking at other motorsports around the wider community.
Well, we're back with another episode. I know it's been a while since our last episode, and frankly speaking, a lot of things have happened. I think just to wrap up this episode as the season ends, we actually visited the Formula One exhibition all the way in London, which is just wild to imagine that we actually have the chance. I think not to make this episode too long, John, what was the highlights of the F1 exhibition tour for you? And then for our listeners who have no idea what the exhibition is, just give like a brief explanation on like what it is and what was like the best part of the experience that you can take away.
Yep, as Nathan mentioned, we both were in London at the time. We were visiting friends and we coincided to meet and at the F1 exhibition. For those of you who are not aware, the F1 exhibition is an official, as the name puts it, an exhibition by Formula One themselves that takes place in various cities around the world. If I'm not mistaken, London is probably their third stop after, I think, Canada and Spain, if I'm not mistaken. So what the exhibition has is that they have a lot of driver or officials interviews that explains various bits about Formula One, some of the history or some of their careers, as well as various exhibits, either from the race suits, the helmets, some old cars, as well as, I think, the most visually striking would be Grosjean's crashed car from the 2020 Bahrain Grand Prix, the one that caught fire and was a miracle that he survived. That was one highlight. To see also, I think, the championship winning Mercedes and Red Bulls from, I think, the 2021 and 2020 season as well, live in person and in the flesh. That was really cool. And some things also quite interesting that I didn't expect to see, that we saw the Drivers' Championship trophies, the Constructors' Championship trophies. We've seen even some, surprisingly enough, some lesser known legal documents, especially relating legal documents, minute taking from the early days of Formula One, which I thought, I didn't really expect to see that. So that was interesting. What was your particular highlight from the exhibition, Nathan?
I think for me, the exhibition is split into four parts, right? So the part that really, got me geeking out was the design lab. So they have a replica of the RB19 just smacked right in the middle of the room. And around the RB19, you get different parts of like the Formula One car. So you get to see like the power units, the tires as well, which is like really, really big, especially in this like era of new regulations as well. Seeing the driver's trophy was amazing. I think the other part was the race suits and the race helmets as well. That was pretty cool to see. So yeah, I think overall it wasn't too bad. I think the ticket price was about £35. You could pay a little bit extra to get on a simulator, but I mean, to be honest, just the price of the ticket itself, you gain access to all of this pieces of memories from the past, the present, and also a little bit glimpse of what the future of F1 could look like.
Yeah, and I mean, it's quite an interesting exhibition. It probably take you about an hour, 90 minutes to go through all the exhibitions, the design lab, but various technical officials to go through. They'll show you how the DRS works, how the power units work, and some of the new ground effect aerodynamics, as well as the historical innovations in the sport. All those are really interesting. You could pay extra for a simulator, but honestly, I think it wasn't that worth it. But I mean, if you have some money and time to spare, it's all right. And then, yeah, the rest of it was a pretty decent time, and it was all in all quite good fun.
All right. I mean, with that out of the way, let's just get straight into the episode. So yeah, I know it's been a while since we recorded the last episode. I mean, things just got a wee bit hectic on our end. But yeah, we're here and we're really excited to just dive into what an amazing 2024 season it has been. I think from where we started in Bahrain, I don't think we expect to see all the ups and downs that we saw this year. So just to sum it up, Max Verstappen has won his fourth World Drivers' Championship with Red Bull Racing by finishing third in the Drivers' Championship. And McLaren
It's more Red Bull Racing finished third in the Constructors' Championship with Max winning the Drivers.
Got it, yes. So Max won his fourth Drivers' title, but Red Bull finished third in the Constructors. Meanwhile, McLaren were the one that actually topped the Constructors' standing since 1998. And Ferrari finished in second, while Mercedes finished in a distant fourth in the Constructors. And Alpine, from where they were at the start of the season, actually managed to make a really remarkable recovery with their short double podium in Brazil, effectively placing them sixth in the Constructors' standing. And Sauber, by some miracle, actually managed to score points in Qatar. With that, Red Bull has got a victory tally of 9 races that were all won by Max and had 3 1-2 finishes in Bahrain, Saudi and Japan. McLaren won 6 races, 4 by Norris, 2 by Piastri, with 1-1-2 in Hungary. Ferrari won 5 races, 3 were by Leclerc, 2 by Sainz, and they had 2 1-2 finishes in Australia and the US. And Mercedes won 4 races, 2 were by Russell and 2 were by Sir Lewis Hamilton, and they managed to achieve 1-1-2 finish in Las Vegas. So it's a mix of, you know, you got a decent mix of race winners, a decent mix of 1-2s as well. I don't think we expected to see that many 1-2s from various different teams throughout the season.
It was quite a variety of results.
Yep. An extreme wide range of variety of results. So I think to start off, like, John, like, was this an exciting season for you? I mean, hitting the 2024, like, from Bahrain, do you expect this is the results that we were seeing by the end of 2024?
I don't think any of us expected the season to be as exciting as it was after Max and Checo had 2 1-2 finishes at the start of the season with Bahrain and Saudi. And Australia looked to be a bit of the exception when Sainz won after his appendicitis. We all thought, oh, okay, that's probably the most exciting race of the season. But, oh, we were wrong. We were very wrong on that. I think the season really, really kicked off in the middle part of the season with McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes all taking turns on top. In terms of historical seasons like this, I think this is the one with the most number of drivers with multiple race wins in F1 history, if I'm not wrong, with 7 drivers with winning multiple races, all of the top 4 except Checo.
What surprised you the most this season? And also, what was your biggest disappointment? Apart from Checo, which we'll definitely talk about it. Yeah, I think in some weird ways, he was also like, he started the season really strong. So you thought like, okay, fine. Like he might be back. And yeah, we all know how 2024 went for Checo. So yeah, what really surprised you this season? And also like, what really disappointed you the most?
I guess I'll start with what surprised me this season was, I guess 2 things really surprised me. One, surprising how bad Sauber was for a large part of the season. Like they took all the way to Qatar before they scored some points. And another thing was, surprise of all people, as we mentioned, Alpine managing a double podium finish in Sao Paulo, which I think they went from 9th to 6th in just one lead. I think everybody was saying there's like 50 million just like that. I think that surprised everybody. Especially because with the news that we've mentioned before the pod that LP will no longer be supplied by Renault engines, they'll be a Mercedes customer team in 2026. It's a surprise for all. Everybody was expecting, oh yeah, LP is not going to do anything. But yeah, double podium. after the French Civil War. You could see even Gasly and Ocon hugging. That was quite a big surprise for everybody. What about you, Nathan? Did you have any particular surprises?
I think for me, it was like Ferrari actually, to how close they were to actually winning the Constructors. Like, they were just wee bit close. And they, I mean, Charles won in Monaco and Monza, which is like, dang, like, you love to see it. Yeah, and surprisingly, I don't think they made that much of a blunder this season. I mean,
their blunders were usually just that they weren't fast enough.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think in terms of disappointment, I mean, despite topping the Constructors, I would have to say McLaren. Like,
really?
I think Hungary was just, yeah, it was just weird, you know, with the whole, oh, you can't win a world championship without Oscar and yada yada and stuff like that. Like, yeah, sure, they won the Constructors, but I mean, you know, it could have and stuff like that. Yeah, and oh yeah, the Alpine also, it's just really, really, really funny to see what happened in Brazil after all the ups and downs, you know. It's just like, yeah, just, you know, to me, it's just like two couples just trying to like bicker to one another. Then after that, like in Brazil, you know, they got the double podium. It's like, okay, yeah, my friends again. It's like, yeah, super, super funny. Especially how it ended for Ocon at the end of this season as well. So it was just like, what a bizarre season for them as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite a number of things ending with that also. And then we should go over quite a number of things that happened. Colapinto came in. He did pretty well. Magnussen got the first race ban in F1 the first race ban in 12 years, I think. And that was like, oh, damn.
Everybody. Well, I think it was Hülkenberg.
No, it wasn't Magnussen. It was Magnussen.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought Hülkenberg got a black flag.
No.
In Brazil.
Banned.
Oh, banned. Oh, yeah, that was disqualification. Okay,
Yeah, that was a disqualification. Hülkenberg was in Sao Paulo, but Magnussen got the first race ban in 12 years
under
the penalty points.
Right.
2025 Haas driver Oliver Bearman came in. That was quite another big surprise. And as we go on, move on to the drivers in our next point, there'll be quite a few big driver changes in the next season. But yeah, it was quite a big surprise. And yeah, we've got some news in the off season between the races that took us a bit by surprise as well, which we'll come to.
Yeah, and I think speaking of which, is there anything you're looking forward in 2025 apart from like the drivers and changes, which we'll talk about later?
I'm hoping that the competitive order still creates a lot of varied results and challenges, because it took us a while to get here. 2022 at the start and was what? 2023 was really boring, and then 2024 picked up. So I'm hoping, because there's like not as many rule changes and the year last year before the 2026 changes come in, I hope for more exciting races and hope for more variety in the championship. And maybe, who knows, Max will get challenged for the drivers because he doesn't have that much of a car development advantage anymore.
Yeah, I think towards the last year of the regulation cycle as well, things are going to be like incredibly close. I think if we see in like 2021 as well, which is the last year before like the new regs kicked in, it was quite exciting. I mean, at least between Lewis and Max. And
yeah,
given
I mean 2021 had some pretty exciting races as well. McLaren won in Monza, that was 2021. That was 2021. Ocon won with Alpine in the Hungary race. That also was one.
Yep.
And the brake magic thing, that was also 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So, hoping for some exciting races. But after 2024 went, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. But I mean, definitely, like, the expectation is there. So, we just have to see how 2025 delivers.
Yeah. Okay, so Moving on from that, speaking of various changes in 2025, we now look at our finalized F1 grid for the 2025 season. So, Red Bull will have Max and somebody else. Okay, for this, we don't have a confirmation yet. And because they're still going on quite a number of rumors that Checo, especially after completely falling off the second half of the season, we are not confirmed yet, but as of now, Checo is still there because he still has a contract there. McLaren will keep Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri. Ferrari has Leclerc, and Sir Lewis Hamilton will be joining in to replace Carlos Sainz. So that's probably one of the biggest moves in at least a decade or so. That was one of the big moves. Hamilton's old team Mercedes would have Russell and Kimi Antonelli, the young F1 rookie finally making his debut. Aston Martin will keep the forever F1 rookie Fernando Alonso and Lance Stroll. Everybody's favorite French team, Alpine, will have Gasly and new rookie Jack Doohan, son of former motorcycle world champion Mick Doohan, who also already made his debut in the 2024 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So, interesting to see there. There's going to be another Australian on the grid. Haas will have Esteban Ocon and perennial super sub for the Ferrari teams, Oliver Bearman. RB would now officially be called Racing Bulls, confusingly enough. We'll have Yuki Tsunoda and Liam Lawson for now, but either of them could get the Red Bull seat. Who knows? Williams has Alexander Albon and Carlos Sainz. And Sauber, soon to be Audi, would be Nico Hülkenberg and 2024 Formula 2 champion Gabriel Bartoletto. So, Nathan, hearing all these, who do you think has the strongest or most exciting lineup?
I think I'm really rooting for like Leclerc and Hamilton. I mean, they are, I mean, it's a pretty strong lineup, right? A 7-time world champion with like the Italian Jesus. So yeah, I mean Ferrari has been, I mean, Charles has been the pinnacle of the Ferrari project ever since he entered into Formula One. So I'm cautiously optimistic as well, looking at how strong Ferrari has been in the second half of the season as well. I mean, we were in this kind of situation before and we had like massive hopes the next season. And yeah, so I mean, on paper, it sounds like the strongest driver pairing. I mean, I mean, it's just me wanting Ferrari to kind of like just win after they were like so close on topping the constructor standings this season. So yeah, I think coming into second, I think McLaren as well. We've seen both Lando and Oscar very, very consistent throughout the season as well. And I think they're able to bring in the momentum they had this year into next year as well. So yeah, I think coming into third would be Max Verstappen and whoever pairs him up for 2025. If they get that second driver, that second Red Bull seat right, they should have like a decent pairing as well. So yeah, I mean, John, like, what do you think among this lineup? Like, who's your favorite?
I think it's probably a toss-up between, as a Ferrari fan, I would say Charles Leclerc and Sir Lewis Hamilton. That's probably really exciting. Unless there's going to be fireworks and drama, that should be quite a star-studded lineup. McLaren has continuity on their side, especially with still a relatively young driver lineup with Norris and Piastri. Besides the whole papaya rules thing, it'll probably still go well. We'll see how that goes. I would actually go for Russell and Antonelli with Mercedes. I think that could be exciting. Like Russell, I think this year he's proven pretty decent, especially in leading the team, making the strategy calls. He could have won in Belgium, especially with that insane tire strat, and the way that he controlled in Vegas also, it was pretty good. Antonelli, if he's as hyped up and as good as what Toto claims, it could be interesting, but we'll see. Red Bull for me is a bit of an unknown, mainly because for the most part of 2024, it's basically Max's team and Checo is just there. You probably could have put in somebody else, or if he DNFs or doesn't score, it doesn't matter. That's how Max became the first world champion. The first world champion in about 40 years for his team to finish third in the Constructors. So yeah, besides that, we'll move on to our next point. Did any driver announcements surprise or disappoint you?
I mean, we have to talk about it, right? Like Perez, like the contract extension, it did not work out. Like, dang, it did not work out at all. I think for me, one of the most bizarre things is that at multiple points this season, I think starting all the way like from the summer break, even before the summer break, there was so much talk about like, can we drop Checo? And they just kept him. I just don't understand what was the logic. Like, it's not like they didn't have the opportunity to put a plug. They could have, you know, but it's just like, yeah, I don't understand why Red Bull, like, you know, kept on believing and like kept on giving him chances after chance after chance. So yeah, I think that's probably like the biggest disappointment for 2024 as well. I think in terms of like surprising, Hamilton to Ferrari, that was like, I don't think anybody saw it coming as well. I mean, if hypothetically speaking, if they were to boot Checo out that seat, who would you put in that second Red Bull seat and who would you promote to Racing Bulls?
I would promote Tsunoda, probably because he's a known quantity and well, he's supposed to have been shown. And then I think that's like Lawson probably needs a bit more time in that car because he's only got like a couple of races after they put up Ricciardo. So, and then to promote back, either it's probably two things. I think what was the name of the guy? I think the runner up in the Formula Two championship. Is that Haska or something like that? He finished runner up to Bottolato. He's a Red Bull Junior. I thought, yeah, he could be an option. Or I've heard rumors that they're trying to buy Colapinto, so who knows?
Yeah, Colapinto is still a factor as well. And even if it's not for 2025, there's still drivers that are leaving this season who could still be back in the market. You got talks about Ricardo, Colapinto, Bottas, Joe.
Maybe Joe maybe makes sense. Ricciardo, I don't think this makes much sense, more sense really. Like, he's gotten more than enough chances, especially even in RB. So what's the point, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Bottas has been rumored that he will just rejoin Mercedes, and there are rumors for his 2026 plans. We'll get to that. There are rumors for his 2026 plans, so doesn't look like it's a thing. And I don't know who else. Like, Red Bull doesn't have that many great juniors anymore.
Yep.
So, I guess then, how do you feel about the number of rookies that are coming into the new season? There'll be four rookies in the green after an unchanged green at the beginning of 2024. So they have Antonelli, Doohan, Bottolato, and Behrman. Even though Behrman and Doohan technically have raced in F1 before, but it's not like full season, just like a couple of races there. So there'll be four rookies for their first full season in F1. What do you feel about that, Nathan?
Actually, before we move on to this question, right, I was actually having a chat with a friend of mine, and he asked this question, which I just don't know how to answer. Do you think Hamilton will obey team orders at Ferrari? If given a chance, they are in a champion, like, you know, Ferrari were in that position. Do you think Hamilton will obey team orders? Because Hamilton is making a move to win his A title, right?
I don't think so. I don't think he will.
Why?
No disrespect to Lewis or Lewis or something like that, but can you imagine if you're coming to a team and as a seven-time world champion, and your teammate, okay, he has like a couple of wins at like a lot of pole positions, but you're asking to move over for him. What does that say about you? Like, you're a seven-time world champion. You have the most number of wins, pole positions in the sport. And the team is saying, no, Charles is faster than you. What are you going to say about that? It's possible, but I don't see it.
I have to agree with you. I mean, it's so hard, right? Because like, we all know why he's moving to Ferrari. I mean, yeah, to end his beautiful career in Ferrari, but also that whole 8 world title kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see. Like, if that actually happens next season, I'll be really, like, the driver's radio and, oh, it's going to be spicy.
Is it really Ferrari if there's no drama? But surprisingly, in this season, there is no drama. Okay, besides, there was one thing, I think it was in Vegas or something, with Charles and Carlos, there was that drama.
Yeah.
But besides that was the only bit of drama. I think McLaren had more drama.
Yep. Right. So speaking about the rookies, right? I'm just gonna go over briefly. So like Kimi, he's fast, but I mean if he is as hyped up as Toto deemed him to be, right? I still think he just doesn't have that experience. He's quick for sure. He has the raw speed, but it takes more than raw speed to be fast in Formula One. For Doohan and Behrman, yeah, they have debuted in Formula 1 before, but never raced a full season. So, it'll be interesting to see. And Bartoletto, I have no idea about the guy. I mean, I just didn't know he won the F2 World Championship and that's about it. But I have never actually seen him racing in the junior series before. So I have no idea. But yeah, so that's just that. I still hope that Franco can actually like find his way back into Formula 1, because during his short time in Formula 1, he was really, like, he was almost on the same level as Albon, and he only came in like almost halfway throughout the season, or more than, he only had a handful of races and Albon has been there a lot longer. So yeah.
I did see this article on the race before, which question is, Albon actually that great at Williams, or was his teammate just Sargent?
Oh I kind of glimpsed the article before. Yeah,
because Colpinto came in immediately, and not to say he did great all the time, he didn't have his crashes the years of like S17. It is what it is, but he scored some points too. And I think that there were a few times he was actually really close to Albon. I think in some races he finished ahead of him.
Yeah, so, I think in some cases he outqualified Albon like right from the get-go. He didn't even need like a whole season or whatever. Like, he was just there.
Yeah,
immediately.
So,
yeah.
It makes you question like how good Albon is. And I mean, this is still really early days and you shouldn't be into pre-statistic. Sainz was fastest in pre-season in the post-season tyre test in Abu Dhabi in new medium. So, I guess we shall see.
We shall see. Yeah, I think speaking about drivers and their super license, I think this season also casts a lot of interesting light between the relationship on the drivers and the FIA as well. So following various conflicts, including a penalty for swearing in a press conference for Max Verstappen, the F1 drivers feared that their conflict with Mohammed bin Sulayem, the FIA president, is getting increasingly strained. The Grand Prix Drivers Association issued a statement publicly calling out Ben Sulayem for the language and the tone he uses, and implied the government body is treating F1 drivers like kids. In 2022, the drivers came under fire when the FIA was told to enforce rules surrounding the wearing of any jewellery and the wearing of proper underwear in the driver's race suits. Cue this famous Sebastian Vettel meme where he actually wore undergarments on his freaking race suit. Yeah. So, related news also saw the departure of F1 race director News, which is another in a long line of departures from the sport's governing body. I think it got me thinking on some of the comments that were made. I don't remember where specifically it was made, but yeah, like they were switching race director. Like it was just, yeah, I mean, it's weird to see so many people, the turnover rate in the F1 governing body. So I think there was a comment made by Jos Verstappen. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, definitely it's a bit, the stuff that the FIA have done this season is a bit sus. So yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on the FIA in today's F1 world, John?
I mean, okay, I started watching F1 right around the tail end of the Max Mosley era. So at that time, there were a lot of conflicts, because there was quite a bit of conflict and strife between him, and also because that was the time when Bernie Ecclestone. So yeah, things like that have happened before. So in a way, it has gone back to the bad old days. But when John Todt came in, especially for the most part of the 2000s and everything, like the early parts of the 2020s, it was a lot more calm. Like, there wasn't a lot of conflict between the FIA and the teams. There was a bit with FIA. There was a bit later on when the late Charlie Whiting passed away in 2019, because I think that was relating to some various race official decisions as the new FIA race director and the whole 2021 thing. So yeah, like there was a conflict there, but it wasn't like targeted towards the drivers personally. So kind of, I feel like it has escalated tensions, and I think Ben Sulayem himself also, like, he hasn't done himself any favors even with his stance even against Formula 1 and Formula 1 CEO. Currently it was Stefano Domenicali, but previously was with Chase Carey. There was quite a bit of conflict there as well, with the Formula 1 side wanting more races and the same number of teams, with the FIA wanting more teams and less races, which is something we'll circle back to in the next point after this. But yeah, so probably not the best look for the FIA, but I'm not sure. It seems as mostly started in Formula 1. I didn't hear that much, especially in the WEC side.
Yeah, I think also another thing is also the race calendar just getting longer and longer. I think they're also pushing it a little bit too much with like being way more extreme. I think at one point Alonso even complained, like, if it gets too long, like, I'll just quit. And it's just the physicality of it. Even if we're not driving the car, I mean, we're still watching 24 races and, you know, people, a lot of the stakeholders, you know, people who create the content, people offside, off the track as well. Like, it's just so tiring. So I kind of wish, like, yeah, just the calendar being like extremely long. So I'm not sure how sustainable it is.
Yeah.
And on that note, is the FIA risking alienating its various stakeholders?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so as it is. If I'm not wrong, due to the number of races as well, I think it was recently announced that, I think it was Zandvoort or something like that, that they'll have one more race, but then they'll drop off the calendar after that. Probably because it's not sustainable. So,
yep.
And having that many tracks at the same time, it might make for a great spectacle, but how sustainable is that? And then sometimes they have some things that just seem to be doing, like they're just indulging things, especially with, I think everybody has seen the Brad Pitt AX Formula 1 thing that's just showing up here and there. It just, I'm like, why? So,
yep.
Yeah, so the FIA and sometimes F1 themselves are not doing any better, so like they're straining the relationship between the various stakeholders. There's been quite a lot of, it's going to be burning out the teams. You can imagine them just being away for 24 races now. It used to be up to the late 2000s, it was what, 18 races, and then 20, then now 24. But damn, where do we stop?
I know. What do you think are the risks if there is a rift between the relationship between the FIA, Formula 1 management, and the teams? Which I think you already explained in brief, but yeah, if there's any point that you still want to add.
I mean, it could be always the thing that, I would say that there is a risk that they have like a breakaway series, or like that was what it was suggested, like at least 10 years ago in 2009, 2010, yeah, not 10 years ago. Formula 1 risks going the way of IndyCar, where you have like a split championship where the teams will form their own one, and Formula 1 has to get like full set of new teams and everything to fill out the spots. And nobody wants that. It's going to ruin the reputation of all Formula 1 and motorsport for a long time. And I think IndyCar is just starting to recover from that when that happened in the 90s. Okay, so, I mean, but then again, speaking of a rift in the relationship, the FIA had, as previously mentioned, the FIA had caused quite a strain in their regime FOM by doing something which took a long while to rumble, and it reached the top steps of government before it finally got resolved, which by approving a new team, which FOM had rejected until now. Which, yeah, it's like right after the Las Vegas Grand Prix, it was announced by Formula One and Cadillac that Formula 1 has given their approval in principle for General Motors to enter the 2026 Formula 1 season. Which definitely came out of nowhere, and I was surprised because it didn't hear about anything for months and it suddenly just dropped. So, when they came out the statement right after the Las Vegas Grand Prix, they announced that they have agreed a deal with Cadillac to join the grid as the 11th Formula 1 team. This deal would be that the General Motors own team would first be a customer team, which was later announced to be with Ferrari power units and gearboxes for 2026 and 2027, before being ready to debut their own bespoke power units in 2028. Yeah, so it was rumored during the Las Vegas Grand Prix weekend, and it just dropped. The news just dropped on the Monday or Tuesday, and we were all, oh damn, it's finally happening. The 11th Formula 1 team. It should be noted that the press release itself contained no mentions of the Andretti name besides Mario Andretti serving as a director in the team. And it was announced a couple of months ago that Michael Andretti had stepped back from the day-to-day management of the sport. It'll be run by the TWG operations. So it'll be TWG running the team as a specialist operation with support from General Motors. So kind of think of it like Penske running the Porsche team in WEC, or Ferrari's WEC team being run by AF Corsa. And kind of like Mercedes with Toto Wolff holding a shareholder. So it's not like the directly owned by General Motors, but it's General Motors partnering with a specialist racing organization to do it. So, yep, and finally happened. We've been talking about this for almost a year now, and then it happened. So, Nathan, what are your thoughts on it, Nathan?
I mean, definitely, it's my first time seeing 11 Formula 1 teams on the grid, so that's going to be like really, really interesting. I think one of the really interesting things is that once Michael Andretti was out of the picture, and then boom, suddenly like everything was like, okay. So it got us thinking, is like, was it the whole situation, was it due to Andretti being a factor? And then now that he's out of the picture, so we will never really know what's the true dynamics between Andretti's relationship with FOM.
Yeah.
But yeah, now, I mean, it's also nice to see another American team on the grid besides Haas, which, like, if you think about it, like, now with the whole Toyota Gazoo partnership, they're not like American. I mean, they have a Japanese team principal as well. So yeah, that's
and
that. I mean,
surprising yeah. now, as it is, both American teams are running Ferrari power units.
Oh yeah, I just realized that. I did not. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. There's a neat one. Yeah. Nice of finding out.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a way, when General Motors comes in with their power units again, we would be adding another power unit, because Alpine has stopped producing any of the engines. Viri has been shut down. So we'll bring up the things to now be, for 2026, we'll have Ferrari, Mercedes, Honda,
Red Bull,
Ford,
yeah,
and Audi. We have 5 power units. Nice. We have a 6th one coming in 2028. If it makes it then, by then.
Mm-hmm. And then speaking about teams, what about drivers?
Yeah, I mean, as previously mentioned, there have been quite a number of rumors and everything like that, that one of the drivers that Cadillac may be targeting, especially for an experienced driver, wouldn't be Valtteri Bottas.
Yeah, but I mean, Valtteri isn't towards the... I mean, it felt like... I think he also came out to say, right, like his entire stint with Alfa Romeo turn stick was a mistake. Not pun intended. But yeah, I mean, Bottas, yeah, he's definitely experienced, right? He was part of Mercedes during from 20 might
was
be wrong
20,
here
2017 onwards.
Yeah, okay, yeah, from 2017 onwards, helped them win multiple constructors. So definitely that experience is there. So yeah, but I mean, thinking that the American outfit, I'm really sure they'll want at least an American driver. So
Logan
I was
Sargent.
Thinking American's greatest hero. I was thinking like Colton Herta, maybe, like, because he was also kind of rumored to join F1 back in the days as well. I mean, there's also Paul. I mean, there are a couple of names out there, so I'm not sure. I mean, right now it's just all speculation, so there's no official confirmation yet. So yeah, I mean, yeah, if you were them, like, who would you choose? Who would you pick? Realistically,
I think I will go with a bit with what Haas did when they first came in, was to get an experienced driver in at least first, then to guide the team. There's no point with two rookies and none of them know what they're doing, right?
Yeah. That's true.
So my pick, I think, would be Bottas as experienced driver, and then for the American driver, I think everybody would want Colton Herta, and I think that's actually a pretty decent choice.
Yeah.
Because Colton Herta's already an Andretti driver anyway, so why not? And I think, like, the only reason that he was previously prevented was due to some of the super license restrictions. So yeah, we can look to that. I think that would be an interesting lineup.
Do you think they have a chance to establish themselves as a household name in Formula 1? It's too early to say, to be honest.
I mean, household name probably depends. But I mean, I think the expectation is probably just don't be like what Toyota was the first time. Just spending millions of money and doing nothing.
Survive your first year first. Don't crash. Don't crash too much.
Don't crash too much. Don't have too high expectations. Yeah, don't do what Toyota does, and don't do what Jaguar used to do, like what Ford used to do, which was basically interfere a lot and saying that, oh, we'll do things the Ford way. They're like, no, you can't do things the Ford way. So, yeah, I guess it's just like establish themselves, be a solid midfield runner, get another season, try to build your way up, and then you can slowly start challenging for wins in a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. So,
possible, but depends on how it is. We've never had a full American team in Formula One in the modern era, because Haas, despite being American, is probably as much Italian, if anything, because they have a base in Maranello.
Yeah, exactly.
So it should be interesting, but I think we're all excited at the fact that we're finally getting up to 11 teams on the grid again. The last time we had 11 teams on the grid was when Haas first joined, before Manor Racing pulled out due to bankruptcy at the end of 2016. That was the last time we had 11 teams. I started watching Formula 1 when we had consistent 12 team grids. That was at the early 2010s. So can you imagine going into Q1 with 24 cars?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be the scene. I think for newer fans, it's definitely going to be interesting. I think because when I started watching Formula 1, it's only 10 teams. So this is the first time it will be going to be an additional different experience. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
The hope for everybody, and I think this is probably still way too far to think, is that we can reach the 12. The rules state there's a maximum of 26 cars on the grid. We are still quite some ways from that, but 22 is a good place to start.
Yeah. Okay, so now we've reached the end of the episode, and also we're going to move on to the Bite Size Update. So if this is your first time listening to the episode, Bite Size Update is basically where we cover news that are not so newsworthy, but we just thought of like including in the episode, as a brief mention. So the first Bite Size Update is that Robert Schwartzman and Callum Ilott are going to drive for Prema in IndyCar, which is interesting. So Robert Schwartzman will join his former Ferrari junior teammate Callum Ilott at Prema Racing debuts IndyCar season in 2025. And despite having offers from Formula E, being a Ferrari WEC driver, and intriguing Mattia Binotto, Schwartzman committed to life in IndyCar with Prema, and Schwartzman will leave the Maranello outfit to now begin a new life in the Open Wheel US series. So I actually don't really have much to say.
I mean the main thing I can add would be for those who are unaware, Prema has been quite an established name in Formula 2 and the Junior series. So it's interesting to see them begin their way to IndyCar, and they're bringing a couple of well established junior drivers that have driven for them in Formula 2, or at least on through the European series, Robert Schwartzman and Callum Ilott, former Ferrari young drivers. So that should be interesting. Just hoping that they'll go better than the last crossover from Europe, which I think Carlin did a couple of years ago, but that didn't really end well. So it should be interesting, and we should see how Prema does. It'll be quite interesting to see all these crossovers. That was part of the reason why it's so exciting to see Andretti crossover. I guess the next point would be Maserati has confirmed their presence in Gen 4 of Formula E. They are already a member of the Formula E grid, but Maserati has committed to the Gen 4 of Formula E moveset that begins at the end of 2026. The Italian marquee was returned to single-seater competition in 2023 after a 62-year absence. It's now the fifth manufacturer alongside reigning Formula E drivers champion Pascal Wehrlein, Wehrlein's team Porsche, winning Formula E team and manufacturer's champion Jaguar, Nissan, and new boys Lola to commit to the Gen 4 ruleset in Formula E. Riding the same powertrains as DS Automobile, Maserati has got two wins, the Jakarta in Formula E Grand Prix in 2023 and Tokyo in 2024, and finished 6th and 8th in their team championships thus far. Questions will now arise as to whether sister brand DS will commit to the sport and continue Stellantis' dual brand assault to the Open Wheel Electrical Series. Yeah, well, always nice to see there's like a different representation in brands. That's where Formula E is. Nice to see that Jaguar, Nissan, Maserati are there. And provide some difference compared to Formula E, Formula 1, and what the WEC brings.
The Formula E season has also started already, right? The new season?
Yes, it just started. It just started their first race. And then the next race will be in January.
Nice. I think I've heard good things about last season as well, considering how competitive the grid was. I think every driver actually scored a win last season, if I'm not mistaken.
Not every driver, but the number of drivers that scout me was quite a lot. They had quite a number of different podiums as well.
Okay, cool. I think before we move on to our next bicycle update, I think there were a couple of like news that just dropped. Sergeant is joining, I think, Endurance. I mean, I don't know what series he was joining, but he's teaming up with, I think it's European Le Mans or something like that. But yeah, he's teaming up with Jamie Chadwick. Mick Schumacher is doing another season with Alpine in WEC again.
Yeah,
so
it's, Mick Schumacher is continuing his drive with Alpine in the WEC. And then I think, was it Bottas or what that was confirmed with the BMW series, BMW drivers? BMW
I think so, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, probably. I'm not too sure. But it's nice to see Sargeant actually getting a drive elsewhere after, to be honest, like, it wasn't completely his fault about how he performed in Formula 1, but yeah, it's just good to see him going racing again.
Well, I mean, it's nice to see him given a chance, and especially with Jamie Chadwick, I think that should be interesting. So, yeah, and I mean, there'll be a couple of new faces in WEC coming up. Like, I think Aston Martin is preparing for their assault as well. Oh, wait, I just looked it up. For the BMW team in WEC is Kevin Magnussen that will be joining.
Oh, yes, I remember, Kevin Magnussen.
Kevin Magnussen will be joining the BMW team, so, and that would be a lot of interesting thing. And all the best of him, that's because I think some of the Formula 1 drivers have found success in the endurance sport, so we shall see.
Yep. And the last bicycle update is the fact that Hyundai Motorsports has finalized its plans for their forays to sports car racing. So having announced plans to establish a LMDH program, IMSA RULESET, where chassis and server parts are provided by other suppliers in September, Hyundai has announced that they will support a two-car Genesis program in the WEC in 2026, before venturing into IMSA in 2027. The Hyundai program, known as Genesis Magma Racing, will be developed in conjunction with Orica and IDEC and based in the permanent strategic base at former French Grand Prix venue Paul Ricard. The driver lineup will include former Williams F1 drivers Logan Sargeant, William Driver Academy advisor Jamie Chadwick, and 19-year-old Marty Jobert. Lord, we're just talking about this. Former Renault F1 managing director Cyril. Oh, Cyril is there. Cool. Will serve as, oh, it's so nice to see. Yeah, okay. He will serve as team principal with driver Andre Lotter, 3x 24 hours Le Mans winner, and Pippo Derani, 2x IMSA champion, leading development of the new GMR WW01 car before moving into racing seats in 2026. Nice, neat. I mean, Cyril is back. Wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah, there were rumors previously. I think like one of our early race recap articles was that Hyundai was thinking of an entry into one of the motorsports because Cyril had joined. So yep, Cyril has now led them into the WEC. So Hyundai has had success in various other categories, mainly in rallying. Like I think rallying. A Hyundai driver just won the WRC, Thierry Neuville.
Yep.
So, that's interesting to see. And again, always nice to see a different brand representation at the top level of motorsport. But yeah, so that's where Logan Sargeant will be ending up. Logan Sargeant with Jamie Chap.
In
2026, which will be quite a different one in the hypercar series.
Yep.
As mentioned, we have in the top level of motorsport, we have Porsche, we have BMW, we have Ferrari, we have Toyota, we have Cadillac, we have Aston Martin, we have Beat, and now we have Hyundai as well.
I think before we end off the episode, I just realized we missed this point, and it speaks volume about their season in 2024. Adrian Newey is joining Aston Martin, so I completely was like, oh yeah, that's happening, and I think he's going to start in 2025, right, if I'm not mistaken. So would that be a factor?
Didn't we cover that in the previous episode?
I mean, we did cover that in the previous episode, like now that he's like, you know, the season ended and considering where they've been and the fact that Lance Stroll is still there, Alonso is still there as well, I don't think it really changes anything, to be honest. It really wouldn't do much to their 2024 campaign because the earliest Newey can actually influence
that's probably
2026.
Yeah, it's probably 2026. I mean, to be honest, I think he's going to ease into it, especially with the gardener leave and everything, especially with his work with the RB17 World Car. At least he can probably begin his 2026 with a big moon change. maybe in season developments, it could be so, like, it could be improved their rate of development, but I don't think you expect to see Aston Martin world champions or even five. That, yeah, that's not gonna happen.
But, yeah, definitely.
As previously mentioned, like, it could be also this, he could help oversee some of that, some of Aston Martin's WEC efforts as well, like, especially with them and a two-time Le Mans winner, you know, Fernando Alonso there. So, right, maybe, who knows, right?
And then before we cap off the episode, is there anything, I mean, this is technically the last episode of the season and we've made it. I'm surprised, like, we were consistent enough, like, you know, one episode, like, I didn't expect to be this consistent when we started the podcast. So yeah,
we were one episode away from the full 12-month streak.
Yeah, exactly. It's not easy, you know, like, life does get in a way sometimes, but yeah, final episode of this season, thoughts, yeah.
I mean, coming up, it's really fast how fast the news cycles tend to change at Formula 1, because the last one in 2021 doesn't feel that long ago, but now four years later, it's going to be another regime change. That's how fast it was. So yeah, and then I guess the next thing is it's going to be different levels of motorsports with new sustainable fuel, new engine formulas, and then it'd be interesting to see some of the various crossovers from different categories as well. Because number of years before the Drive to Survive era, like, Formula One tended to be very exclusive to themselves.
Yeah, I think on my end, I'm just surprised that it's been interesting, you know, like, diving. I think this season was more, for me, the personal learning was actually learning a lot about the stuff off track, learning more about different series as well. I mean, because surprisingly, there was quite a number of, like, off track stuff that happened this season, which is kind of rare. Like, we don't usually talk about the stuff that really happens off track. It's more on the on track action. So yeah, I guess, like, once again, thank you so much for listening to this episode, whether you started from episode one or you just tuned into the show. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify and do drop us a review on what you thought about this episode. So for more updates, feel free to follow us on LinkedIn with the word Race Recap for all of the latest updates. And once again, for the final time this season, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Jonathan.
Stay safe and thanks for listening.